This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. What barriers did voters face in the 2018 midterms? In North Carolina, some of the potential barriers for voters began before Election Day with changes in early voting rules. Legislators made adjustments to early voting requirements at the end of the legislative session earlier this year. An analysis done by WRAL found that change disproportionately affected poor and rural voters in the state. Tyler Dukes is an investigative reporter for WRAL, and he joins us now. Welcome back, Tyler.
Thanks for having me.
Talk about these rule changes that happened. When did they happen and why?
Yeah, so these are rule changes that were put in place a little bit earlier this year. And essentially, the rationale for this was to standardize the hours that were available for early voting. And so when legislators, you know, put this into practice, what they said is during weekdays, polling locations should be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and that should be standard across the state. Now, before this, essentially, counties had a little bit of flexibility in terms of when they could open their sites and how long during the early voting period they were actually available. This allowed them to save a little bit of money. And so, you know, we saw this pass very, very quickly in the 2018 session. It took about 40 hours for this to go through the General Assembly. And so, you know, we saw a lot of county boards sort of scramble to figure out how they're going to fund this. And that was one of the main problems that they saw, at least from the election official standpoint.
And that is part of the story. It took everybody by surprise. End of the session, not a lot of scrutiny. Again, this has become a pattern with the legislature passing legislation without a lot of public discussion. And as you said, counties themselves were scrambling, and many of them complained about this because of the cost burden that they were going to have to bear, right?
They did, and this was something that we heard argued on the floor in the General Assembly. And, you know, when you talk to election officials, especially those in rural areas and in poorer counties, it was a real concern about, you know, how expensive these early voting locations are to operate because, again, you know, voting and conducting voting is a complex operation that these counties have to undertake.
And so before, so if you keep it open from 7 to 7, that means that you're open the whole time. Some of these counties might have shut down midday because there's not many people showing up, save them a couple of bucks, but we're open for peak demand.
Exactly. Some of them would open in the morning and then sort of shut down while people were at work and open back up in the afternoon. And again, the rationale, you know, the Republican lawmakers essentially said here, you know, this is confusing the voters. We want to standardize this and also by, you know, the way, expand hours available to voters to cast their ballots early.
So did they just bear the cost or did it actually have an impact on the number of polling places that were open?
It certainly had an impact on the number of polling places open. And when you look at that sort of top line number, what you saw is a decrease in the number of actual polling locations, about 20%. But on the other hand, the number of hours available to vote early in North Carolina expanded by almost 100%. So they almost doubled. So, you know, this is one of those scenarios where, you know, you could sort of argue one way or another about, you know, questions of access.
You have more hours, more time available to you, but the locations are a little more spread out. So I guess the issue would be, did the distance, right, that people had to travel because they're more local, or the one that was closer to them had to close, did that matter?
Right. And this was sort of our central question when we set out to look at this issue. You know, when you look at the distributions of these early voting locations across the state, you know, we wanted to see, were there any groups that were disproportionately impacted by closing these locations? Because, you know, in a lot of cases, the richer counties, we're talking Wake, we're talking Mecklenburg, they can bear the cost burdens of keeping old locations open. And in some of these counties, in fact, they not only expanded hours, they expanded the number of locations in 2018. So we really tried to see if we could cut through some of that to answer the question of how does that location impact individual voters and voters within the subgroups that, you know, we track.
And what'd you find?
So our analysis essentially looked at the driving distance between the closest early voting location in 2014 and the closest early voting location in 2018. And what we found here was that the vast majority of voters across the state, about 80%, didn't really see much of a change. So, you know, essentially what we looked at is, did your early voting location move either 1 mile closer or 1 mile further away? So 80%. Yet the people who actually did see those impacts were disproportionately in rural counties, in poor counties. And I mean, if you look at it, you can parse these numbers many, many different ways, because again, we did this analysis of about 6 million voters in the 70 counties where we saw these changes. But essentially 2 in 10 rural voters saw their early vote, their closest early voting location, move a mile or more away. And if you're in a poor county, it was 1 in 4. And that, again, disproportionate impact for poor and rural voters when they're compared to their urban and wealthy counterparts.
All right, so that if that tells you about the distribution of polling places that had to be closed as a result of this, then the next question is, did it matter to voters? Did the 1 or maybe 2 mile extra drive, or however they would get to the polls, did it? Can you see whether it had an impact on their voting pattern? Did they vote less?
And this is the central question that we're hoping to look at now that we've sort of done this analysis before the votes were actually cast. You know, we're seeing a historic turnout in 2018 in terms of a midterm election with no statewide race. And we saw that during early voting. We saw that on day of voting. So the central question to this study, I think, and something we're hoping to look into in the next couple weeks is, okay, we know that these distances changed, but did motivation override the sense that, you know, moving these locations a couple of miles away, you know, the costs of that to voters?
Right. Well, let's introduce another participant in this conversation. Joining the conversation now is an election law expert, Irving Joyner, a professor at the North Carolina Central University School of Law. Irving Joyner, welcome back.
Okay. Thank you, Frank. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Let me ask you about the changes, just in general, the early voting, the changes in early voting. Sort of at the time, what did you make of them? And now that we've had a chance to see their impact, what do you make of these changes?
Well, we had predicted that that they were going to pose problems, particularly down east. And that is where a large segment of the African-American community is located, and that there would be a disproportionate racial impact to what the General Assembly was doing. And you also have to now factor in the fact that over the last couple of months, we've had two really devastating storms down there. So not only did you have fewer polling places, but now you had people who were displaced from their homes because of the storms. And those occurred over like a 2-week period. And many people had to actually leave their homes. Many of the polling sites that were scheduled to be open had to close due to damages that was suffered. So while you talk about a 20% loss before, in actuality, it was more than that when you factor in the storm damage and the many problems associated or caused by those storms. Now, we are trying to get the figures in. It is going to be difficult to really assess it because, as was stated earlier, we had a historic turnout, and it is difficult now to compare the turnout in 2018 with the turnout in 2014 because the factors were completely different. But yet we are still trying to make contact with people that that were displaced to see if the issues and problems and concerns that they faced was resolved in any way.
You know, it's interesting, too, though, when you look at the work that Tyler and his team did at WRAL, the analysis shows that the people who were disproportionately affected were in rural and poorer communities. Now, if you're a Republican, those are your districts, right? Don't the rural voters tend to vote conservative? And therefore, this would have, if they knew in advance, and you can't imagine they took this action without understanding precisely the impact it would have. Surgical precision is generally how they work in these voting issues. That they're also, in some ways, suppressing the Republican vote in those rural areas. Irving?
Well, the design was to focus. You know, let me just go back. a large segment of the African American community is located in the South. So there we're that community is going to be disproportionately impacted. Most of the Republican vote is not really down east; it is more west. And central portion of the state than down east. So the impact has a significant racial impact down east that's not present when you look at the rural counties in the central and western part of the state. The General Assembly clearly could not have anticipated the storms coming in, and the storms merely exacerbated the problems that they created, and with the intent, well, surgical precision, with the intent to impact negatively African Americans who live in those communities. There were also fewer polling places in the urban areas because, despite the fact that they could open up more sites, they still did not open up as many sites as were available in 2016 and was available in 2014. So the design of the legislature in creating these uniform hours, 12 hours per day, did also impact the urban areas. It just impacted the rural areas more.
Tyler Dukes, what do we know about voting patterns in those areas? Well, let's start with that one.
Sure. I mean, and I will add an important caveat to this, project that we did is one that Professor Joyner pointed out. You know, we looked at the polling places as they existed on the books and not the areas impacted specifically by the storm. So some of those polling locations moved around. We took sort of the original locations. So that's something we still need to look at. But, you know, in terms of the demographics, I mean, one of the things that we saw is that, you know, and I think this is a function of the disproportionate impact to poor counties, rural counties. But we actually see white voters and Republican voters impacted a little bit more by the change in early voting locations than Democrats and black voters. Not a huge difference. Both of them are impacted. That was one thing in talking with Republican lawmakers for this piece. They pointed to that section of the research and said, you know, look, if we were out to get black voters, out to get Democratic voters, wouldn't you see that more pronounced for those segments? And it is something we did not see in the research.
Irving Joyner, what would you say to that comment that Tyler Dukes got from his informants?
Well, again, I would say that we need to look at the actual turnouts reach some conclusion about just what the actual impact was. And we're still trying to gather data from our people down on the ground.
Tyler Dukes, this does raise some very interesting questions because this is the kind of thing that the courts are going to have to ask as these various now lawsuits move their way through the courts, both in terms of redistricting, gerrymandering, and also some of the voter laws that have been passed. Exactly what the impact was and what the intent was. These are going to be hard things for the courts to parse. Your work is in investigative journalism, and what Professor Joyner, you know, pointed to, the fact that we have this unprecedented turnout, how are you going to make sense of that data? Are there ways in which you can correct for that and filter for that to come up with some kind of sensible conclusions?
It's a great question, and there may be. You know, I think a lot of what we're trying to do is borrow, you know, in our work is borrow from the techniques of social science and political science, and you know, one of the things that we did with this project specifically sort of vet some of these findings with those groups. Certainly the level of turnout in this election is going to complicate things. And one of the reasons is that when you talk to, you know, public policy experts about the things that motivate people to get to the vote, to cast their ballot, you know, there are these things like location, hours, availability, accessibility. But that's on one end of the scale. Motivation is a way bigger factor. And, you know, what they say is, well, we can't leverage motivation, right? So on a public policy perspective, we can change hours, we can change locations. This is an election, I think, and it looks like the numbers are bearing this out, that motivation may be an overriding factor that really muddies the water.
Professor Joyner, though, I wonder about what would you think about that, because there's another way to ask that question, too, and that is to say that, yeah, a lot of people did turn out, and we see the way the results went in a lot of places. So, you know, if the argument was Republicans were trying to repress the Democratic vote, they may not have done a very good job. But the other question is, well, how many more people would have turned out? So, I mean, I don't know how you filter for that, but it is a legitimate question, even when there's unprecedented turnout, is there not? Is it not?
Right. Well, and we have demographers that we're working with to try to figure out a plan for trying to measure just that. But clearly, motivation is probably a strong factor, maybe the strongest factor in people getting to the poll. I know that one of the things that we were promoting as a result of the storms was the increased use of absentee ballots by people who were displaced from their residences in the eastern part of the state. We've yet to receive data about the increase of absentee ballots and where that increase was recorded. But we do know that there was a significant increase in the use of absentee ballots. And we have to kind of dig down below the surface to find additional information about exactly what that means. But clearly, motivation is a big force. It was something that we promoted, tried to get our people that we were in contact with motivated to come out, and we are hopeful that it succeeded, but we're still looking.
We are talking about the impact on changes in voting rules, early voting rules today on the state of things. Talking with Tyler Dukes, an investigative reporter at WRAL, Irving Joyner, a professor at North Carolina Central University School of Law. Irving Joyner, you've talked about some of the other problems in terms of voter turnout and getting out the vote, and you say that, you know, in a lot of ways there is some confusion about the rules and that there needs to be better education about those. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, you know, the we have this early voting period in North Carolina where a voter can go to any polling place and register and vote at that polling site. The rules though change on election day, and on election day everyone must go to their assigned precinct. And a lot of people don't understand that and know when that cutoff occurs. The standard or traditional law was that October 12th, everyone had to be registered to vote or they couldn't vote. But then there is the early voting, which allows people to register and vote. That causes confusion with people. And then the switch from early voting rules to the traditional voting day rule, where you have to go to your precinct to vote, further confound people. And we had that situation to exist here in North Carolina Central, which was a polling place where we had literally hundreds of students who were in line expecting to be able to register and vote on election day, but some were turned away because they had not registered before, and they were under the impression that the early voting rules were in place on that day. And that confusion resulted from poor education by the State Board of Election that could have helped those people to understand that had they voted on Thursday and Friday, they would have been able to vote, whereas on Tuesday they were not able to vote.
Irving Joyner is a professor at the North Carolina Central University Law School. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Tyler Dukes is an investigative reporter with WRAL. And Tyler, I guess there's more to come, right? You're going to follow up on this. And
lots more work to do.
We'll have you back. Tyler Dukes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can see links to this reporting at our website, stateofthings.org.